And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. My name is Jamie Waste. I'll be your host for today's program. Following National Native News, we'll be getting an update on all things Eagle Crest. Evelyn Bass will be here to profile her new business, Deeper Light Psychotherapy. Going to get a preview of this month's Wildlife Wednesday programming, photographing Alaska's wildlife featuring Michael Phelps. Also highlighting Friday's Gallery Walk High Tide event featuring paintings by Emily Rodkey and musician Mitch Sumner. And we'll learn about this Sunday's recital concert featuring Kyle Farley Robinson on piano and the Mendenhall String Quartet. Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more on Juno Afternoon coming up next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders discussed recovering homelands with federal officials during a recent gathering in Washington. Capitol Hill reporter Matt Laszlo has more.
Most Native American tribes still don't have anywhere close to the amount of land they once had. Melanie Benjamin is chief executive of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe.
Our homelands are our basis of who we are. They are sacred, and we want to have those homelands protected, recognized, and safeguarded for the future generations.
Mickey Jamil of the Pitt River Tribe in Northern California says the numbers are staggering.
Our ancestral territory was 3.4 million acres. Today, we only have about 12,000 acres.
Even though they have been given back some lands, Jamil says it's far from ideal.
It's checkerboarded, scattered over that 100-mile square, which separates our people. You know, we have to have a land base to be a people. The current structure just doesn't work.
Deputy Secretary of the Interior Mike Connor is reassuring Native leaders that their homelands are a priority for the administration. Connor says past administrations had terrible allotment policies.
The issue of fractionated interests within Indian country and the checkerboard that exists on many reservations impacts the tribes, their ability to pursue economic activity, and it doesn't do much for the individual landowners.
Even with this acknowledgement, Jamil is skeptical of any possible changes coming from Washington.
I mean, I'm truly looking for change to happen. Well, a lot of times we come to places like this and meet with different government agencies, and our needs, they go unheard.
The administration is currently working to restore more lands back to tribes, according to Connor.
We've restored the equivalent of about 1.5 million acres to tribal ownership. This is taking land, purchasing it from those individual landowners on a willing seller basis, and restoring immediately as part of that transaction that land to tribal trust ownership. So we're very proud of the progress that we've made and the progress that we expect to make over the next year.
Tribal leaders fear that once President Obama leaves office, the issue may not be a top priority for the next administration. I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Canada's national Inuit organization is calling for a name change to one of the country's football teams. The Edmonton Eskimos made headlines after winning the championship game, the Grey Cup, over the weekend. And as Dan Karpinchuk reports, one of its former players says the name should be changed because it's offensive.
Some historians believe the origin of the word Eskimo comes from an Algonquin term that means eaters of raw meat. They say it was used in a derogatory way. Despite the term, those in the north call themselves Inuit, which means the people in Inuktitut. And it's a term they've used for hundreds of years, and experts say no one uses the term Eskimo anymore. The president of Canada's National Inuit Organization, Nathan Obed, wants the team's name changed, saying his people should not be used as mascots.
Eskimos was never the term that we use to describe ourselves. There's a larger movement for Indigenous peoples calling for all Indigenous mascots for sports teams to be removed, and so we want to join that fight. Thirdly, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission calls for a new relationship between Indigenous people and Canadians.
Officials with the team say they are willing to talk about the name. Meanwhile, a former player for the team, Andre Talbot, also says it's time to respect that name because as it is, it's considered offensive to Aboriginal people. He says sports groups need to be community-building organizations, and if one part of the community is isolated and offended, then the organization isn't doing its job. And changing the name of the Edmonton Eskimos would be a small but positive gesture. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Support by the Blackfeet Nation, who thank the U.S. government for joining them to seek permanent protection of Montana's Badger 2 Medicine Area. Information about the work to protect their sacred lands from oil and gas development at badger-2medicine.org. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
And up first today on a Juneau afternoon, we actually have a news update. Just in from our news department, this is a preliminary autopsy result regarding the death of our mayor. So the summary says, an autopsy on Mayor Stephen Greg Fisk was performed by a state medical examiner in Anchorage today. JPD officers were in attendance, and the preliminary autopsy report indicates the cause of Mayor Fisk's death was natural causes. According to the findings, the external injuries sustained by Mayor Fisk were consistent with an injury due to falling or stumbling into objects. No foul play is indicated. The final autopsy report, to include toxicology results, is not expected to be complete for 2 to 8 weeks. So, more on this coming up, probably during All Things Considered, so stay tuned for that following a Juneau afternoon. Excuse me. Okay, Jeffra Clow is in the studio. It's an update on Eagle Crest, all things Eagle Crest. What's going on, Jeffra?
All things Eagle Crest. Well, hopefully people got up there last Saturday, and because we were able to get open for the season last Saturday. We had Black Bear Chair and Hooter Chair open, and it was a fabulous powder day. So we're looking to see what Mother Nature did to us this week, and we'll decide what – we'll have something open this weekend, I'm fairly confident, but we'll announce what that is probably tomorrow afternoon.
You just check the temperature up there. Things are cold enough.
They are cold enough. It is about 31 degrees, 30, 31. And so the temperature has been dropping. So I think as soon as we start to get some precipitation out of the sky, it'll probably come down as snow up on the mountains. So that's what we're all hoping for.
So between now and opening, people should just pay attention to the website.
Yep, they can find out our website at skijuneau.com or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, and we'll let people know what facilities we're going to have open for the weekend.
Exciting. And I think you said earlier before we went on that last weekend you got the early opening.
We did on Saturday. And,
and for those adventurous souls.
It was fabulous. It was a full-on powder first day opening, and there were smiles all over the whole mountain. And it was good to get some turns in and definitely good to get some powder turns in.
Mm-hmm. So full crew up there. Everybody's grinding away, getting ready for opening day.
Yep. Everyone's grinding away. We still have some positions open, so if people are looking for jobs, we're looking for ticketing cashiers, we're looking for instructors, especially those that want to work with 3 to 6-year-olds, and we're also looking for a cook and some other food service folks. So there is some jobs, so again, you can find those positions available at skijuneau.com.
Okay, very good. And there was a couple of other things that you wanted to just touch base on here.
Yep, just wanted to remind folks that the applications for the annual Hillary Lynn Scholarship are out now, and they are due tomorrow. So you can find information on that at skijuneau.com. There's a slider on their homepage. Just click on that slider. You can find the applications. The Eagle Crest Board gives away 4 season passes every year. 2 for kindergarten through 5th graders and 2 for 6th grader through 12th graders. So if you need a season pass or you want a season pass or you know a deserving youngster who wants a season pass at Eagle Crest, get them to fill out those applications and get them into us tomorrow.
And then I think the other thing was the downtown rail. We talked about it last week,
yep,
and it sounded like so much fun, but I guess
know.
It didn't happen, right?
No, it didn't happen. The weather kind of shut us down, caused us to postpone it, which I think was a good thing. So we have rescheduled it, and so you can mark your calendars for Saturday, December 19th.
And just remind the audience, what is the Downtown Rail event?
We're bringing Eagle Crest to the downtown waterfront. So in Marine Park, we'll have a terrain park feature. We've got a lot of vendors that have signed up to help us out as well. We're just going to celebrate winter and have a little terrain park competition. So whether you're a skier or snowboarder or even just a spectator, come out on the 19th of September. Of December and check it out.
And Marine Park, is that what you said?
Marine Park, yes. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like fun. Anything else you want people to know about?
Just a reminder, season passes are on sale. We had a snow sale last weekend that started last weekend, and they're on sale till Sunday, December 6th. So an adult season pass, you can get it for the cheapest rate of the year, so make sure you grab that at skiduno.com.
I realize forecasts can be very tricky and treacherous when it comes to the difference between very cold rain and snow, but let's hope the forecast holds and you folks continue to get lots of snow. You're getting lots of snow above. It's kind of at the lodge there that we need lots of snow.
Yep, we do need more at the bottom, but we're all confident that temperature will drop a little bit and we'll get enough snow and we'll get everything open and everyone will be happy.
Sounds great. Jeff or Clow, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 2nd of December, 2015. It's the birthday of the novelist Ann Patchett, born in Los Angeles, 1963. Grew up Catholic, went to an all-girls Catholic school in Nashville, where she still lives. Ann Patchett, who said, "Catholicism really trained me for fiction writing. I think it has to be the greatest religion for a fiction writer, because it is so much a tradition of story and parable. I spent my whole childhood on my knees in front of pieces of carved marble, and in my heart I was filling that stone with enormous life." Ann Patchett, who went to Sarah Lawrence, where one of her teachers was Grace Paley, and Patchett said, "Grace Paley taught me that writing must not be compartmentalized. You don't step out of the stream of your life to do your work. Work was the life, and who you were as a mother, teacher, friend, citizen, activist, and artist was all the same person." Ann Patchett, author of Bel Canto, Truth and Beauty, and most recently, State of Wonder. It's the birthday of George Saunders, born in Amarillo, Texas, 1958. In high school, he discovered Robert Persig's Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance and books by Ayn Rand. Particularly influenced by Ayn Rand, he started thinking of himself as a character from an Ayn Rand novel. Went to the Colorado School of Mines to study engineering, then to Syracuse to study creative writing. His books include Civil War Land in Bad Decline, The Very Persistent Gappers of Fripp, and a collection of stories entitled 10th of December. George Saunders, who said, "Humor is what happens when we're told the truth quicker and more directly than we're used to." It was on this day, 1939, LaGuardia Airport opened in New York City. There had been a small private airfield on the site. Before that, an amusement park, the Gala Amusement Park. But Mayor Fiorella LaGuardia decided there should be a major modern airport in New York City. He bought the field in 1937, got the federal government to build and pay for it using workers under the Works Progress Administration. Here's a poem for today by Robert Morgan entitled Heaven's Gate. In her 90s, and afraid of weather and of falling if she wandered far outside her door, my mother took to strolling in the house. Around and round she'd go, stalking into corners, backtrack, then turn and speed down hallways, stop almost at doorways, skirt a table, march up to the kitchen sink and wheel to left, then swing into the bathroom, almost stumble on a carpet there. She must have walked 100 miles or more among her furniture and family pics, mementos of her late husband, exercising heart and limb, outwalking stroke, attack, she strode, not restless like a lion in zoo, but with a purpose and a gait, and kept her eyes on heaven's gate. A poem by Robert Morgan, Heaven's Gate, from Dark Energy, published by Penguin, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. And by Staples, with technology products, copy and print, shipping and other solutions for businesses of any size. Learn more at Staples and Staples.com. Staples, make more happen. Engineered by Noah Smith and produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And the next topic on today's program is the Alaska Wildlife Alliance Southeast presentation of Wildlife Wednesday. So this is a monthly feature. And we have in the studio Michael Phelps, photographer, and his program this evening is called Photographing Alaska's Wildlife. And we also have Patricia Weary. It's Weary, correct?
Weary.
You got it. Who's a board member with the organization. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
And Michael, of course, we're going to talk about what you're going to present tonight and your background and your expertise in photography and what have you. But Patricia, maybe just first a little bit about the program. What is the Wednesday program and the organization that sponsors it?
So the parent organization is Alaska Wildlife Alliance. That's out of Anchorage for the whole state. And we're interested in the continuation of critters in Alaska. So that means we're interested in their habitat and their health, sustained good health. We are that the parent group is looking at promoting creatures, but the one in town, our chapter here in town, we do a lot of education, and that's just what the Wildlife Wednesday is for. And so during the winter months when people are cooped up, they can count on the first Wednesday of the month to be a Wildlife Wednesday, and we have six or seven of those throughout the winter.
So tonight's presentation is at Thunder Mountain High School Library.
Correct.
And it starts at 7 o'clock.
Correct.
And free, open to the public.
Free, open to the public with goodies and a chance to jabber with each other.
So, Michael, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Have you done this before with this group? Have you made one of these presentations before?
No, this is my first one.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to steal the thunder for people who go tonight, but just to give people a hint, a clue as to what they, if they do go tonight, what are they going to see? What are they going to hear and learn about?
I'm pretty much going to be sharing a lot of images from recent road trips up north through interior Alaska, the Yukon. If it walks, crawls, swims, or flies, you're going to see it. I got a pretty good selection there. Last time I looked, I think I've got about 24 different animals represented in this, so I got a good view.
And is this from a career's worth of work, or is this just in recent trips?
Just recent trips over the past year or two.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll pretty much show them, I'll give them a general idea of the habitat they were in, what was going on at the time of the shoot, you know, what their activities are.
So there's some narration along with the pictures. You're explaining
yes.
context and
yes.
circumstances and what have you. I imagine sometimes you're also explaining what it took to get the shot, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's not like you're just driving along and all these shots miraculously appear, although it might happen on occasion,
Believe
I suppose.
Believe it or not, sometimes it does.
Sometimes.
But not too often.
Not too often. And you're shooting all seasons, right?
Yes, all seasons. Year-round, even at my regular job, I keep a camera beside me all the time because you never know what's going to pop up.
Mm-hmm. So your regular job, real quickly, is you do have another job. You're not just being a photographer full-time.
I do facilities maintenance for a housing authority here in town.
And then are you, do you schedule trips to go out and get these pictures pretty much? I mean, do you know that I need to get on the road in order to capture these images?
Every time I get a spare weekend, a spare day, or 3 weeks, I'm out.
Yeah. So how do you know when you've got a good shot? Do you know right away? I mean, when you're in the field, do you know right away that you've got a good photograph, or do you have to wait until you kind of get back and take a look to see if you got it?
Well, yeah, usually I was like, oh, look, this is going to be great. I love it. And then you get it back and go, what was I thinking? It looked good over there. Now it's all blurred out because you're all excited and everything. But no, I look at it and I like it. And...
Mm-hmm. So when I asked the question about all seasons, I mean, Alaska can be a tough place to be shooting in all seasons. So what's your motivation here? What is it that drives you to do that, to get out there so you can capture these images and share them with the public?
It's beautiful out there, no matter what time of year it is. Even when it's gray and raining sideways, there's always something out there to see. As somebody put it last week, and he says every day is a postcard, and it is. It's out there.
And are you, do you have a like a catalog in your mind of images you hope to get someday that you've been to places and you've thought, oh, I just got to come back when the lighting is a certain way? And or I mean,
I have my bucket list shots that mm-hmm. I want to go after. I want that ultimate northern light shot, or you want that mountain goat shot, or you want that doll sheep shot. And there are times where I will deliberately take a trip out and go towards that objective, but most of the time, it's just I just go out there and see what the land has to offer.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get into photography? I mean, have you been doing this all your adult life? Or?
I liked photography ever since I was a kid. What really seriously got me going was a senior housing facility here in town where I was working. And they did a big renovation. Got done, and the only thing they had for artwork on the walls was puzzles. Mm. And they're falling apart, pieces missing, cardboard. It just looked really bad, and it was really depressing. And I wanted to give them something that looked nice. So I started going out, and I started taking scenery pictures and flowers and things like this with vibrant colors, and I put it up there for them, donated it to them, and they liked that. They were really getting into it. And then I started listening to them. And they started talking about places they used to go and things they used to see that they couldn't do anymore and how they really missed that. And I paid attention to that. So I started going out to these places. And I started taking these pictures and I started bringing them back. And when you saw that look,
mm-hmm.
So that's what got me going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just started with. I just wanted to make people happy.
And how many years ago was that?
Just over 17 years ago.
Uh-huh.
That's neat to hear. I didn't know that. I like knowing that.
Patricia, so how the programs that you folks produce, obviously there's always it's a photographic presentation of something. Is that correct?
There's always visuals.
Yeah.
And sometimes a fish and game, it gets to more technical, or a NOAA presentation might be more technical.
Uh-huh.
But it's a public science level of technical, and there's always photos that go along with it. We haven't this year we've done, this will be the second one with just where a photographer is featured, and not so much sciencing behind it, but he observes a lot. So I'll be eager to hear the behavioral things behind his pictures. That's what I really want to hear when I go to Wildlife Wednesdays. I want to learn something new.
Mm-hmm. And Michael, the kind of the range of images, I think you touched on this at the beginning of the interview, but it's going to be everything from landscapes to flowers to animals to, I mean, is there a certain focus tonight?
This one is Wildlife Wednesdays, so I've got wildlife in this one. It's in the air, in the trees, in the land, in the water.
Mm-hmm. Any favorite pictures we're going to see tonight?
Every single one.
I like that.
Every single one of them has a special moment, a special memory that I can look at and relive in my mind. I remember when I was there taking the shot and what the air smelled like, how cold it was, what the animal was doing.
Mm-hmm. And that'll be, I'm assuming that'll be part of the presentation tonight, will be you kind of filling in that story that goes along with it. Good. Yeah. So just photographers, a lot of people love to take pictures, and you've obviously developed a level of expertise here and a passion and a commitment to the point where you've got images that people want to see and you get to present. For aspiring photographers, any words of advice, especially on the wildlife landscape kind of stuff, because we're surrounded by this incredible wilderness, for people who wish to do more, what kind of advice would you give them?
Just got to get out there and play with it every day. Use it and just do what makes you happy. Don't let others influence you and say, no, you're doing all this wrong. Just focus on what you like and what makes you happy out there. But you definitely got to get out there and just got to use it.
Patricia, anything else before we move along here?
What kind of a tool are you using? What camera are you using?
I've got three Canon cameras right now, so 5D Mark II, 5D Mark III, and a 1DS.
Right. So within the range of people to use without a large expense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those are pretty large expenses.
Yeah.
Well, again, it's part of this is aspiring.
Yes,
people
it
are
is.
Aspiring.
It is. I mean, I started off with this little Sony Mavica that had the little 3.5-inch floppy disk that went into it before they had the memory cards. It was a 3-megapixel camera. And that's what I started shooting with.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it with a little point-and-shoot in your pocket. And nowadays, it's phenomenal what they're doing with cell phones. I'm seeing people with cell phones that are taking shots that are making me jealous.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you on that front. Patricia, anything else? We're going to wrap it up here.
Nope. We hope people will come out, and we've got three more still coming this year. 2015-16 is what I'm calling a year in the season.
So Michael Phelps' photography and his explanation of and his stories around each of the images are going to be featured tonight at 7 o'clock at Thunder Mountain High School Library. This is part of the Wildlife Wednesdays program from the Alaska Wildlife Alliance Southeast Organization. Michael, nice to meet you.
Thank
you for your great images. Patricia, good to see you. Thanks for both of you for coming in.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Many people think that evolutionary change occurs so slowly we cannot observe it directly. Not so. For example, today in the U.S., house finches are evolving rapidly and visibly. In 1941, some captive house finches from California escaped near New York City. They spread rapidly and are now found across most of the United States and in southern Canada. Many of these areas have cold, snowy winters, during which many birds die. The finches have evolved because those that survive differ from their parents. Size is one example. Male house finches in recently established populations in Michigan and Montana are larger than the males that escaped. Large males outcompete small males for food, so are more likely to survive the winter. They also pair more successfully with females early in the spring. Smaller females survive better than larger females as nestlings. Also, because they need less food to maintain their own bodies, they can breed earlier in spring. Females that breed earlier raise more young than those that start breeding later. Rapid evolution of house finches reminds us that evolutionary changes are occurring visibly all around us. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Support comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, offering HydroFit every Tuesday and Thursday from 6:30 p.m. until 7:30, Aqua Aerobics Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. until noon, and Stretch Aquatics Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45. Fall swim schedules are now available online at juno.org/park/rec/pool. More information at 586-5325.
Last chance to see the hit musical of the year, Sweeney Todd at Perseverance Theater. There's only one thing better than hearing Stephen Sondheim's music, and that's hearing it live. Don't miss out on hit songs like Joanna, A Little Priest, The Ballad of Sweeney Todd, and Not While I'm Around. This is your last chance to enjoy this beautiful music and unforgettable characters. Final shows run Wednesday through Sunday. Tickets at the Jack, Farside Books, ptalaska.org, or 463-TIXS.
And I'd like to welcome into the studio some folks from High Tide. And High Tide Tattoo Parlor, what's the name of the business?
It is High Tide Tattoo.
Yeah, High Tide Tattoo. Mm-hmm. We have Dave Lang, who is the owner, I believe, and Emily Rodkey. And I believe you're one of the tattoo artists. Is that correct?
Right, yeah.
But so that's one role, one hat you have on while you're here. But you have another hat on today, and that has to do with Gallery Walk coming up first Friday, this Friday, the big one of the year, big exciting one of the year. So my understanding is Emily's artwork is going to be on display at the Taqueria. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're using the Taqueria as a venue. Our shop's pretty small. And plus, with when we feature an artist, we don't really want to have a lot of competition with all the visual stuff going on in there anyway. So it's nice to pull it outside of the shop and let it shine on its own. And the Taqueria has been a great venue, in addition to being just friends of ours and working with another business. They've been great in hosting our event. So.
So just before we open up the microphones, you were mentioning that you've been interested in trying to do some kind of quarterly presentation of art in the community. Is that correct?
Yeah. The Featured Artist Series, this is our second. Our first one was a few months ago with an artist named Jolene Chupp, who's awesome and does art under the name Fake Witch. And what we're doing is friends of ours that are outside of the tattoo community or even within it, we're trying to give them some good exposure with using the shop as a bit of a starting point to bring some exposure to our friends and different artists.
Mm-hmm. And Emily, so obviously tattoo is art, and I'm just curious, but Friday, what is it? What art are you going to have on display?
I'm going to have a lot of original acrylic paintings on display. A lot of them are on canvas, some of them are on wood, but they're a little bit outside of the tattoo realm. It's definitely kind of inspired by stuff I do at work, but it's not quite tattoo art.
Mm-hmm. So you're an artist, and part of what you do is tattoo work. But have you always been producing other art beyond tattooing? Or I'm just curious, the roots here, somewhere along the line, tattooing became part of what you do, but you've also been creating these other mediums.
Yeah, absolutely. Growing up, I always wanted to be an animator. I always looked up to like Preston Blair's animation and Don Bluth. People like that. I think it definitely reflects in a lot of what I paint, a lot of the projects that I do for fun and not necessarily that would apply to tattooing. A lot of very colorful, goofy and raunchy sort of subject matter. Yeah, definitely.
Dave, is it common for tattoo artists to be just artists, period, and tattooing happens to be part of their expression of creativity?
Yeah, you get a pretty good mix. There's some folks who, when they get into tattooing and tattoo artwork, they stay pretty much within the realm of what you would consider tattoo art and expand on that. And then there's several tattoo artists who explore a bunch of other mediums that they may have had before, coming into tattooing, whether it's painting, photography, sculpture, all kinds of different stuff. So it's pretty common for a lot of artists to have an outside medium. It's nice when you're producing artwork on demand, especially with the pressure of tattooing it on somebody, to be able to make your own artwork without any limitations or kind of boundaries is nice, and I know a lot of tattooers that explore that.
Emily, in whatever free time you do or do not have in your life, are you constantly working on art? outside of tattooing, and or was this like, oh, there's this opportunity, I'm going to create a bunch of stuff because the gallery walk is coming up?
A lot of the things that I did produce for this were specifically for this, but I do practice painting and drawing outside of work all the time. If you check out even the shop or my Instagram, you could see, like, I'm always posting little fun things that I've done that which has been awesome. People have seen that stuff on Instagram and come to me for those specific things. So that's really cool, like drawing interests of people just with the things that I did for fun, mm-hmm. you know, not necessarily specifically for anyone or anything.
So on Friday, how many pieces are you going to have? What kinds of pieces?
I think I'm going to have at least 8 original paintings up for sale, but we're going to have prints and merchandise, patches, all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we've got she's got 3 designs that we made into patches that are just limited edition for the show. Stickers, we're going to be printing up shirts this next couple of days. So there'll be a lot of exclusive merchandise for the show, so that'll be great.
So this is at the Taqueria from
yep.
7 to 10
yep.
on Friday. And you have live music? Did I
yeah,
read
Mitchell Gonzalez is coming up from Portland, and he's going to be playing. So that's going to be great.
So Mitch Gonzalez?
Yes.
From Portland. So tell me what kind of music or...
How would you best describe Mitch's music?
Definitely acoustic. A lot of it's kind of satirical. It's subtle, though.
I would
it's
say
really
a subtle satirical folk.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Very good. Dave,
mm-hmm.
So I kind of want to circle back to your interest, your commitment here in trying to present art to the community.
Sure.
How do you carve out the time for that? I mean, you're busy with your own work.
You're
making this. I mean, you know, such a rich culturally, you know, arts community and what have you, so many people contributing to it. So here you are trying to add even more into that.
Yeah, it really is. And it's it can be a little difficult to carve out the time, but thankfully I've got a bunch of help. A lot of friends of the shop and folks who have worked with us have come together and really helped out quite a bit in doing a lot of the legwork and setting up venues and doing placing orders and getting a lot of this stuff produced. Lorelei Miko has been super helpful. Sabrina Bracker's super, super helpful. So it's been great to have that kind of have a bit of support in putting these things together. And one of the goals is just to be able to, like I was saying earlier, expose things, the artwork of our friends that maybe doesn't fit into the typical venues around Juneau, though it is a very rich town in arts and culture. You don't see a lot of the kind of stuff that some of our friends do, so it's nice to be able to present that. And it's been great. Like I said, I've had a lot of help. So
I'm intrigued now. you're doing a good job of luring me into the Taqueria on Friday night. I want to check it out. No, I hear you. You know, there's you're not always going to get to see everything that's being produced in the town. You know,
mm-hmm.
And so here's an opportunity, perhaps. So Emily, just back to you. If you were to, you know, we got people listening who are going to do gallery walk, and I mean, they're going to close down Front Street. It's going to be really fun this year, as it always is, and it looks like the weather might be good. So fingers crossed on that front. But if you were going to just kind of a little bit of a tease, a little bit of a hook for folks to make sure they wander down to check out your work.
Oh yeah. It's definitely don't bring your kids. I guess would be a good starting one. It's like don't bring the kids. A lot of ColourPop original work. Again on kind of the kinkier side of things.
Provocative.
Provocative. Yeah.
The provocative
get
stylings.
Get the kids going. No.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. We got a bunch of merchandise produced and live music, and it should be great. I'm really looking forward to it.
Sounds good. Dave, anything you want to add here before we wrap it up?
Just that I would like to thank Laura, Sabrina, definitely the folks at the Taqueria have been really helpful. Thank you guys for having us on.
Oh,
of course.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. And again, I've mentioned this a couple of times, but at the heart of all of this, tattooing is an incredible art form. I mean, anytime you see people's tattoos on their bodies, but you know, also you see the images that people, that tattoo artists have posted, that have made available, this, like, here's the original design or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty outstanding creativity. So tip of the hat to both of you for
your endeavors
in that regard, and have fun Friday night.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming
Thanks
in.
Thanks for having us.
Yep.
All right.
I am the Queen of Elfland, Thomas said the writing on the wall. Look for me on the A train headed south, when you thought you wouldn't find me at all. I've been watching you all your life, waiting for the day I would take you down under the hill. 7 years, 7 months, 7 days. So ride with me o'er the ferny brae, through the rivers of blood that run, on the road from the Eildon Hill. Sing for me at my bed and board, sing for me in the dawn, sing for me as the crowd rushes in and the loudspeaker says to get on. Sing to me by the sun and the moon, though neither one hang in the sky. Electric blue is the light underground as the time passes seamlessly by. Train your songs for the silence now, to the truth has your tongue been trained, till the winds and the seasons change. I am the Queen of Elfland, Thomas, you are mine, you are mine, you are mine. Though you walk on the earth once again, it will be for a very short time. But when the sun finally sets in the west and you give your last breath to the sky, into the sunlight and under the hill, Summer King, Summer King, Summer King, we will fly. Hill, Summer King, Summer King, Summer King, we will fly.
Okay, we are quickly rearranging chairs and shuffling people in for this final segment here today on a Juno afternoon. And I'm not sure I've got everybody's names, so you'll have to excuse me if I don't get your names right in the beginning. But our next topic is, it's a benefit concert for JAM, which stands for Juno Alaska Music Matters. And we'll learn more about that program in just a minute. It's on Sunday, there's a recital concert, and it features Kyle Farley Robinson on piano, and Kyle is here in the studio. It's also going to feature the Mendenhall String Quartet, and Sophia, I believe you're part of that quartet.
Yep.
It's also going to feature the JAM Chamber Group. We've got two young artists here, musicians here, who are going to be a part of that too. So, Sophia, why don't we start with you? Just tell us what the JAM program is, and then maybe we can talk about the concert itself coming up.
Sure. So JAM is at three elementary schools here in Juneau, and it brings music
violin string instruction to over 600 kids this year. And I have two of them here with me, Jemima, who plays violin, and Aliciana, who plays bass. And this year's an exciting year for JAM because we have four resident musicians and teachers for JAM who are helping teach viola. That's what I teach, and then cello and violin as well. And so on Sunday, we get to share in music together, but it's also all about supporting what these wonderful kids get to do three times a week in coming together and playing in an orchestra together.
JAM is based at UAS, is that correct? What's the foundation for JAM? How does it work?
It's at Glacier Valley and Riverbend and Ock Bay, but we have kindergarten, starts in kindergarten and first grade. They get 90 minutes of violin instruction every week, and then as they grow older, we have after-school JAM club, and so they get to try being in choir, trying ukulele, trying playing in a full orchestra like these ladies get to do, or just focusing on playing their violin as well.
Why did I think UAS? Are you a teacher at UAS?
Yeah, the connection.
There you
is,
go.
The connection is the four teachers who are the quartet members are getting their master's at UAS. So there's a partnership there.
All right. So, Kyle, welcome to the studio.
Yeah.
I want to make sure your microphone's working. So you're the featured pianist at the recital, is that correct?
Yes.
So how long have you been involved with the JAM program?
Well, last year we had a recital just like this one that also benefited the JAM program. It's just we didn't have any JAM musicians playing. But this year we get to have a full string quartet and then these young JAM musicians play, so that'll be really good.
And how long have you been playing piano?
I've been playing for about 8 years.
Uh-huh. And has it always been classical?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And on Sunday, what are we going to hear? What's the lineup? What are the composers? What are the pieces?
Well, first, I'm going to play Beethoven's Pathetique Sonata, all three movements. Second, I'll play Rachmaninoff's Prelude in G-sharp minor. And third, I will play a Chopin Revolutionary Etude, which is a very fun piece.
And you're in high school, is that correct?
Yeah.
What year in high school?
Ninth grade.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're so grateful that Kyle is donating his performance and they're providing a reception for the concert. We're really grateful that he's helping support our program as well. So come out to see Kyle, but come out to see our JAM musicians and the quartet on Sunday.
So let's talk about that a little bit. So Sophia, again, do you want to introduce our two other musicians here and we can learn more about their backgrounds and what they will be performing on Sunday?
Yeah, so I said that I have a violinist, her name's Jemima, and a bass player, Allie, here, and I would like to hear from them what they're playing on Sunday and maybe what they like best about playing in the chamber group. Jemima, you want to go first? Mm-hmm. It's called, the song is called String a Song for Christmas, right?
Somebody's got to speak up here. Go for it.
Okay, I'm Jemima, and I play the violin in chamber group, and we're going to be playing some songs, and we're going to be playing String a Song of Christmas, which includes The First Noel, Silent Night, Deck the Hall, and Jolly Old St. Nicholas, and we wish you a Merry Christmas.
And so, Allie, is there something you'd like to add about what's awesome about playing in chamber group this year? Because it's a new group this year. We've never had all cello, violin, and bass playing in the same group before. This is a new, exciting thing.
Well, one thing that's awesome about the chamber group is that we get to play more challenging songs than we do in regular JAM. And, like, we get to tune our own instruments. and like we just get to work together.
That's what it's all about, is helping these fifth graders, second through fifth graders, learn about what it's like to work together in an orchestra. And that translates into what it's like to work together in a community. So I don't know if we mentioned what time and where the concert is on Sunday. That would be very important information for everyone to know. This Sunday, December 6th, is at Northern Light United Church at 4 o'clock. And there's a reception to follow, and we'd love to see people there. There's no ticket sales, but it's by donation. And this is where it's all about the why. We're here to support this program to keep it going and to keep people, young students, working on what it's like to play in an orchestra. So we hope to see lots of people there supporting this program.
Kyle, are your pieces, are you solo, or are you a part of the bigger group's performances?
Yeah, all three of my pieces are solo.
Mm-hmm.
But Kyle is also going to accompany the chamber group on String a Song for Christmas. So we will get the whole group together at the very end.
Sophia, how many young musicians altogether are involved with the benefit concert this coming Sunday at Northern Light United Church at 4 p.m.?
There are about 20 between violin, cello, and bass.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And is the program an hour or hour and a half?
It's about an hour long, yep.
Yeah.
You'll hear a Mozart quartet from the Mendenhall Quartet, as well as a movement from a Beethoven quartet, and some free improvisation from the four resident quartet members here. And then the chamber group will play their String a Song for Christmas and invite everyone in a sing-along.
Fun.
So,
Kyle, I'm curious. Classical music at a relatively young age, if you've always kind of been pursuing it, do you have any sense for the affinity or the connection that you had at such an early age for classical music? I mean, there's also pop culture music, and there's all these different things out there, but for some reason you connected early on in your life with that music. Do you have any sense there?
Well, when you play classical music, I think you can really express yourself. And, I mean, pop music is very fun to play, but it just doesn't have as much depth as classical. So that's why I've always liked it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have friends and peers that have joined you on this musical journey? Or do you find yourself kind of, by yourself a little bit here pursuing classical music?
I do. One of my friends also plays piano, and he plays violin. Mm-hmm. And I have another friend who plays viola.
And are they a part of, have they been a part of Jam in the past? Are they a part of it now? Or
They were too old.
But
I hope that this next group of musicians will have all gotten the good jam education.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad that Kyle brought that up, because Jam is a relatively new organization still. It's been around for six years now, and these ladies that are here in the studio with me were part of the original kindergarten class that went through that first violin, paper violins, through real violins, and then expanding to cello and bass. And our hope is that through Jam that they have these awesome relationships that, just like Kyle and his music friends, they're finding that depth in classical music and will always be able to play together,
mm-hmm.
find that joy.
Yeah. So these younger musicians here are both smiling away as Sophia is talking. So for folks who are intrigued and interested in coming, any particular inviting pitch you might make to people to say, you know, to get them to come on Sunday to participate and to watch these young musicians perform? Anybody want to take a shot at that?
How would I'm gonna put it to my friend here, Jemima. What is your favorite part that you hope that people come to hear on Sunday?
My favorite part is probably "We Wish You a Merry Christmas."
I really hope people get to hear that too, and I really hope people come to sing along, because that's the joy of music making, is doing it together. That's what Jam's about, and that's what we want people to come out to support on Sunday at 4 o'clock at Northern Light United Church.
Kyle, how about you? Any hook you would give to the audience for coming down and checking out your music?
Well, I will say that my favorite piece is the Chopin Etude. It's called the Revolutionary Etude because Chopin was Polish, and during the Polish Revolution, back about 200 years ago, he was kicked out of Poland. And so I think he wrote this etude to just project all his feelings about being kicked out of Poland.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really fun piece to play.
Mm-hmm. Fun as in powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Well, thank you all for coming in to the studio today. We've been learning about Juneau Alaska Music Matters, the JAM program, and their benefit concert, which is this Sunday. It's a recital concert featuring Kyle Farley Robinson on piano, the Mendenhall String Quartet, the JAM Chamber Group. It's Sunday at 4 p.m. at Northern Light United Church. There's no ticket cost up front, but donations are going to be accepted as it is a benefit concert here for a wonderful program teaching, you know, classical music to young adults, young people here in the capital city. So thank you all for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Rick Steves. I believe the more we know and understand about our world, the more fun it is to explore. We're all in the same traveler's school of hard knocks, and it's okay to share notes. Let's spend an hour each week exploring the places and people that make our world so inviting, and share tips that help turn our travel dreams into smooth and affordable reality. Join us for Travel with Rick Steves, Sunday afternoons at 3 on KTOO.
And a look at the weather. Rain showers this evening, scattered rain showers late, lows around 36 degrees, east winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, and for Thursday, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers, highs around 37, east winds 10 miles per hour, and tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, so weather is kind of looking a little bit better. Friday, mostly cloudy, might be pretty darn good for gallery walk on Friday. You are listening to KTOO in Juneau. We're going to go live to National Public Radio, where we understand a press conference is underway regarding the shootings in San Bernardino.
The information we have is that they came prepared to do what they did as if they were on a mission.
Police say up to three gunmen opened fire today at the Inland Regional Center in San Bernardino, California. At least 14 people are dead. For Wednesday, December 2nd, this is All Things Considered. I'm Kelly McEvers. Police exchanged shots with suspects in a black SUV. They say two suspects are being dealt with. More on this story in a moment. Also this hour, a Republican media strategist on what's happened to the party establishment.
Voters are fed up with everything they've seen before, and they want something completely different, and there's nothing more completely different than Donald Trump.
And a Hillary Clinton supporter on why she quit her job to go knock on doors.
Maybe it's just the volunteer spirit that my parents gave me. Like, I just feel like I'm part of something, you know, I'm making history.
News.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. A chaotic scene in San Bernardino, California at this hour, where police say at least one suspect has been shot and an officer injured on the heels of an earlier mass shooting at a social services center. TV pictures there show a bullet-riddled SUV, as Matt Gillum with member station KVCR reports.
Looks like its windows are shot out and authorities are bumping it with these big armored vehicles, still waiting to see what, if anything, is in there. Police are now combing a neighborhood nearby to see if there's anybody there that perhaps has made their way into the neighborhood, and they're going house to house.
Police have been looking for a suspect or suspects who are believed to have carried out the shootings that left at least 14 people dead and 7.